Some people like to deep clean every Saturday morning. I prefer to spend a few minutes every day keeping things fresh with Lysol. Lysol's brand new Day All-Purpose Cleaner cleans and kills 99.9% of viruses and bacteria on hard, non-porous surfaces around your home with a fragrance that feels like a tropical getaway for your senses. Don't just clean, Lysol clean.
Hi, I'm Ben. I suffer from a condition called writer's block. It strikes when I'm at work. That's why I choose Canva Magic Write. It works fast, generating texts in seconds, thanks to AI.
Common side effects include increased productivity, compliments from coworkers, feelings of satisfaction.
Now I can say bye-bye to writer's block.
Ask your boss if Canva Magic Write is right for you at canva.com, designed for work.
This is a big year. The Ohio Lottery's golden anniversary. 50 years of excitement, of growing jackpots and crossed fingers. 50 years of funding for schools, of changed lives and brightened days. 50 years of fun, and that is worth celebrating. So watch for can't-miss promotions, huge events, and new games that will make the Ohio Lottery's 50th year its biggest one yet. Learn more at funturns50.com.
We're back. It's a distraction. I'm Drew. That's Roth. How you doing, Roth?
I'm good, man. How are you?
I'm good. I'm all refreshed after my little ski vacation.
Oh, yeah, that's right. You activated mountain mode for
Dude,
a little while. How was it?
It fucking rocked. It's cool. It was great. I ski, like, it was the best skiing that I had done. And I don't mean that, like, in terms of, like, the resort and the, like, it was really good in that way.
you mean, like... You did a good job?
Yes, in terms of my skiing ability, which is no joke after, you know, when you're 47 and after recovering from a stroke and all sorts of fun stuff. So it was good to actually, like, feel athletic for 2 days and then come home and then sit around with my dog again. Also,
was there a moment where you felt like a guy in with the old Juicy Fruit ads, like you did a cool jump and, like, kicked your legs up?
So, like, if you go down, because I don't fuck with, like, like, I did a couple black diamonds, but, like, easy black diamonds. I didn't do, like, you could go all the way to the top of Big Sky and ski down, and my friends did that. But that's, like, the backcountry shit where there's, like, trees just hanging around and, mm-hmm. like, sheets of ice. And, like, I don't do any of that. But, like, so, like, if I'm on, like, a green or a blue, like, off to the side, there'll always be, like, someone will have carved out, like, a little jump. Like, I'm talking like a baby bump, like a sledding jump. You know what I mean? Mm. And I'm like, ooh, now it's time for me to get extreme. And then I go over and I'm like, hee hee, and like get like the 1-inch vertical. But I'm like, yeah, Juicy Fruit is gonna move me.
That's pretty cool, man. That's great. I'm not gonna steer this conversation towards the Big Red ads. We don't need to talk about gum ads. We have a guest. We got to try to be normal. But I'm glad that you had fun out there.
I don't know why you always say we have to be normal around a guest. If anything, we should be.
Why even... and me of all guests?
Right.
I picked
the wrong guest. And honestly, that's on me. That's my fault.
Our guest is the impeccably named Ed Zitron, host of the Better Offline podcast, proprietor of the Where's Your Ed At newsletter, and possible Autobot. How you doing, Ed?
I'm doing well, and I'm more of a Decepticon, but...
It is a cool...
Wait, no, that's the bloke from The Ringer.
It's a great Decepticon name. I would give you the Starscream voice. Citron!
There he is. That's very rare good. Drew voice.
Citron you almost, has fallen!
Citron has fallen. That's a future Gerard Butler movie where he kicks the shit out of me.
Ed, I believe that you are our first authentically British guest, so congratulations to you for that. And... You know, while we're on that topic, I have to ask, how's England doing? Are y'all good over there?
Every modernization of this country that I've seen, being here a few days, I'm thankfully going back to Las Vegas next week, well, actually end of the week, everything is just, they've got Uber Eats and Amazon is fast now. That's about it since I came back. It seems to be, there's a lot more casinos, just random casinos, which isn't cool. Great. I thought I left those behind in Vegas, but... Apparently, they follow me everywhere.
But weren't casinos always in Europe? Like, we're new to the whole gambling thing, or the legal gambling thing. I mean, but that's old hat to Europe, isn't it?
But it used to be there'd be, like, one that you'd see occasionally, and they'd be, like, a weird small shop. But I was on Edgware Road and I saw one the other day. I saw some the other night. Where was it the other night? I've seen at least three, and it's just very sad because London is already very expensive. We don't need more ways for Londoners to have less money. Yet here we are, crapping up the place. It's and not our good normal casinos in Las Vegas where they're beautiful.
Right.
No, we have these sad little casinos. I don't even think they have table games. What's the bloody point?
Oh, yeah.
Are they are they depressing, Ed? Or is it because I know that like every time I've seen a casino, like I know what Drew is referring to because we have the same idiotic reference points. This is what makes our podcast so powerful.
Mm-hmm.
Is that I'm thinking of like a place where like everybody's wearing like white blazers, like sort of where Clive Owen worked in Croupier, but mostly a place where like Bob Hoskins would get ushered out for being day class A in the 1980s.
No, these look, now you can't see inside them from the street, but from what I've done, what I've seen on the Google is they look more like the casinos that you see in the Vegas airport where you're allowed to smoke.
Nice. All right, so like, good.
Like yep. OTB energy is what you're saying.
Yeah, but also the weird thing about them is a lot of things in England close early, but not the casinos. They're 24/7. It's just things are like useful things aren't really available here all the time. But don't worry, ways to burn cash in on slots of all things. Ugh. Slots.
This is
That's
the powerful aspect of casinos is that like if it's working right, like if you're getting the right level of depressing casino experience, something like a third of the people in there not only never leave, but like maybe have never left. Like, they might have grown up in there like the old guys in the Unforgiven video from Metallica. They've just been in that room the entire time that they've been alive.
Yeah, I thought about going inside one of them, but I don't want to cheat on my beautiful Vegas casinos.
Yeah. You mentioned the places close early in England, and I wanted to remember my time in England because I went to Oxford for a trimester back in 1997, and I remember this was back when, and you can tell me if this has changed, that the pubs would close at 11 p.m. And everyone bitched about it, particularly if you were an American. You were like, whoa, what? And so by the time like 10:45 struck, like all of us college kids would like rush over to like the bar and we'd order like two beers and two shots for like each of us, like to get as drunk as humanly possible.
Right.
Before 11 hit.
Otherwise you'd remember you're in England.
Right. Yeah. Then we would go to a club because clubs were allowed to stay open. There was one in Oxford literally called Downtown Manhattan Nightclub and was like DMN. And so you would go to the nightclub to throw up and then find someone to fuck for the night. And it wasn't a bad way to live, but I think now that the pubs stay open like 15 minutes later. I don't know.
Yeah, and there are random, there's like a crepe and ice cream shop that's open until 3 a.m. that I've seen. It's just this country's, I don't miss living here. I miss my family terribly, but everything else, I'm just like, especially when you live in Las Vegas, which is like a giant vending machine. Everything's 15 to 20 minutes. If something is half an hour away in Vegas, it may as well be in Mordor. Here,
right.
Everything is 15 minutes away. Like, you can't go anywhere. You might, whatever's around the corner, you can walk to, but I don't know. I wouldn't walk around in London personally. But also, just there is a natural pain to living in London. And I appreciate it on some level. I'd love to believe that it helped me in some way, but then again, I left when I was 22, so that probably says more than anything.
When you left, were you like, I need to leave this country, or was it, like a professional sort of thing?
Oh, I had to leave England. And I moved to Manhattan, which at 22, as a Londoner, is like living in a movie. I love New York a great deal. I wish I still lived there. And yeah, England is slow. People complain all the time. He says complaining. And it's just the weather is also uniquely awful here. The sun is currently shining, which is a rarity.
The one day a year. Congratulations.
Even when it gets hot here, it's so humid. It's as bad, if not a little worse, than when I lived in North Carolina.
Truly bad weather is like people, obviously we talk about the weather on this podcast. Drew and I basically talk about like lower back pain and how it's looking out the window for a lot of these episodes.
Yeah.
But the idea of like a London grade bad experience, I remember my wife was looking at graduate school in Syracuse at one point, and I was looking at how many days of sun per year Syracuse, New York gets, and it's like 110.
Yeah, I have never heard a single good thing about that town from people who went to Syracuse. They're like, oh, you don't want to go to Syracuse. That town is ass.
Yeah, I was ready to. They were like throwing the Carmelo Anthony scholarship package at her for graduate school too, and I was like, I could eat shit for a year. Like I could like not see the sun for a year. That'd be fine.
Right.
You get a but wound up not happening. And I know that you know London. I don't know that 110, that's like a uniquely Western New York experience.
A real quick Google says 126 sunny days in London, but I think that they're fudging the numbers a little bit.
Yeah, because that's like, if it's a day where you get the sun. Like, yeah, if you get like 10 minutes of sun, that counts as a sunny day, which is bullshit, you know?
It's and like, Vegas is the opposite. Whenever it rains there, it rains for like 15 minutes in the most intense, crazy way possible, and then you would not know it happened. It's beautiful sunshine. Perfect. Right. Perfect place, other than the things it does to people who can't control their urges.
Not you, though. You're normal. You've had a good time there.
No, my addiction is staying at home, so it's perfect. Yep. I love you being alone at home.
The way that you chose to blow money in Vegas was in one large block on a Raiders season ticket package, which is healthier than just continuing to bet on black at the roulette table over and over again.
I made a profit this year on selling those tickets, but this was the first year where I was just like, no, I'm not doing this. Someone gave me like $1,200 for both tickets to the Packers, I think it was. And it's just
holy shit.
I felt like Sam Bankman-Fried.
They won that game. The Raiders won that fucking game.
Great. I mean, I like Antonio Pierce. I think he might actually be good for the team. I don't care if we're mediocre, at least if we can be fun mediocre. If there's the appearance of trying versus the Josh McDaniels genius mode, just entering the Patricia zone.
Yeah, there's nothing engaging that you can do.
Yeah. You don't want the miserable 7-10 record. You want the fun 7-10 record where you're losing every game 35-30. That's way cooler.
Yeah, exactly. I can feel like there's a chance versus losing 35-30, but it being because we scored in like the last quarter a few times because the defense was just like, there is not enough time for you to score enough points. We're just going to send in the clowns.
Ed, let's get to the reason we brought you on. You work in PR, but you also cover the tech industry. And you, reviewed the Apple Vision Pro. As did I. Now, I came away from my demo. You get 30 minutes for free. When I took the demo, I was like there were some things where, and you and I agreed, like computing on it is a waste of time. Like,
I agree with that point, but I know what you're getting at.
I'm not going to write using an invisible keyboard and like do my work and all that stuff. But
no,
immersive photography and immersive home videos, and particularly immersive sports. When I saw immersive footage of a basketball game, I was like, if I can watch an NFL game this way live, it's over. Like this, everything's going to change. Like, so, and I think that's the intent. And obviously, because this is a first generation product, you know, like the Apple Watch, when that first came out, people were like, whatever. And the AirPods, people were like, oh yeah, they'll fall out of your ears. Both of them became dominant products.
Right.
But I don't think that you necessarily share that viewpoint. Do you agree? Is that correct?
So I agree with you on the immersive entertainment stuff. So on the plane ride here, like a dickhead, I wore my Vision Pro watching Slow Horses with Gary Oldman.
Slow Horses? You what, mate?
Cartwright, you asshole.
You went full glass on Wharton Public. I'm very, very...
I turned my body to look away from people. My fiance was next to me. So it's like, I think no one threw anything at me. That was good.
I love to pull on a $3,500 device and then be like, don't look at me. Then,
yeah, trying to hide it like I'm a monster.
Were you in first class, Ed?
Don't want to talk about that.
That's confidential. That's Ed Zitron information.
Yeah, that's private information.
Actually, I was in the cockpit. I was the pilot.
I was flying the plane, but I was watching it, and there was one problem, which was I felt myself getting like weird tension in my eyebrows while watching it, which is a big problem if you like not being in pain. But I did watch a few episodes because it was just annoying, and also watching the show was very cool. Just a giant screen in front of you, it looks great. I had my earbuds in, it was great. It was just, the entertainment on it is incredible. And when you actually plug in a keyboard, it's a great workspace. The problem on the plane, by the way, is it was very dark, and the Vision Pro has absolutely no idea what to do when it's too dark. It just freaks out at you. It just turns the screen off at random if you move too much. Yeah, there are so many moments with it where I'm like, wow, this is so cool. It's too expensive. It's kind of wonky, but it's cool. Watching stuff on this is better than watching it on TV.
Yes.
Unless, of course, there are other people there, then it's very strange. But every time I start getting excited about it, because I've written a lot on it, like it's really good for writing if you're using a Bluetooth keyboard, like the Magic Keyboard. And the problem is that things keep going wrong with it. It will select the wrong thing. It will turn the screen off because it's too dark. It will, when it's dark as well, sometimes it doesn't know how to line up the screen. So the screen will be just like, it'll just be like somewhat on its side, like it's drunk. And this is the thing. It is version 1 software.
Yep.
But it's also 0.5 software. It's very, there are so many things where you're like, did you not fucking test this in the dark? Did you not try and use Google Docs? Like, if you try and use Google Docs, you have a lot of trouble making your eyes select the title. You know, the title of a piece of software used by billions of people. They just didn't check it. There's so many things like that. And I just don't... Well, I know why they shoved it out, because they could. They're Apple. They don't give a rat fuck. They just push things out because they can. But it's so frustrating, because when it works, and that is a load-bearing when, it's great. It's really interesting. It's too expensive, just to be clear, but you use it and you're like, oh shit, this is really immersive. And like you said, watching sports in it would be amazing. I really would love to. It's just so early, and it's too early to have released. It's lazy in so many ways.
So that's something I wanted to ask both of you about, is why it's cool that it is as good as it is. Why is it something that people can use if there's so much shit broken on it now? Like, what's the both of you presumably know more about this than me. What's the calculation in putting out something that's 3/4 of the way? Well, you've had it on your face, you know, and like Ed's written about this stuff for years. Like, is this a mistake, or is this just sort of what you're going to do now? Like, you release, I mean, I know that like OpenAI and all that shit is putting out products that don't work, but also they don't know what they're doing. This is a product that like, it seems like it actually is cool and works. And yet, like, why is it there?
First of all, I believe OpenAI knows exactly what they're doing. They know they can foist this broken shit on people. They love doing that. That's the Silicon Valley way. Ship it broken, hope it gets fixed in the future, hope enough people buy it to make it worth it. The Vision Pro, I believe, is profitable. I think it's because, and I've written a lot about this, the whole growth at all costs economy, rot economy, I've said before. Apple just needed to show that they had something new to investors. Okay. Investors were going to be like, you haven't invented a new thing in a while.
Yeah, where's the fucking car?
Pretty much. It's Apple is insanely profitable. They have like $200-something billion in cash. They own just like the tech ecosystem. Yeah, as we all do. And
a successful blogger can say as much.
And it's, you look at it and you're like, how could they do this to people? And the answer is, they don't really care. They had the broken butterfly keyboards for years on the MacBook Pro until Joanna Stern at the Journal lost it with them. I think that they just knew that they could do this, and they needed to please the street more than they needed to deliver a product. Steve Jobs was a sociopath, an awful, awful guy, doing an episode of Behind the Bastards on him soon. And nevertheless, he didn't release stuff broken. He'd do the you're not holding it right thing, but this thing is a level of broken that is very obvious the moment you use it. And when I first got it, I know, Drew, you've done a demo with it. I've had easily 25 hours with it now.
You own one.
Yes, I do. Okay. And because I did my Better Offline review of it. Yeah. And here's the thing with it. It's so obviously off from the moment you put it on. And it's so ridiculous. You buy this thing, you have to scan your face to get the size right of the light screen on it. And what's crazy is they got that wrong the first time. I had to buy a new light screen and it was $300. And I can't find, people on Reddit claim that you can go and swap them. I don't know. I've returned one thing. I bought an extra headband that I returned. But if Apple gets the sizing wrong, which they did with me, you have to just pay to fix it. Maybe you can change it. I don't know. And Apple does not have any helpful media on apple.com, their own website, to tell you this thing. And then you get into it and you try and find an app you like. Signal, for example. Load up Signal, because it apparently has access to over 1 million iPad apps. Load up Signal, and it asks you to scan a QR code on your phone. Now, how the hell do you do that on a Vision Pro? Well, the answer really is you question. Have to You have to AirPlay what you're seeing on your Vision Pro to your television and scan that QR code with your phone. And this is Signal, incredibly popular app. They advertised, I believe, that Slack would be on it. Slack is not on it. The Slack iPad app is on there. They just half-assed this thing. And I think that they knew they could. And even with the reporters that have been fairly critical of it, the problem is reviewing something like this is, on one hand, it's broken in all of these ways. On the other hand, there are moments like Drew and I have where you're like, oh my God, this is actually really great. And I actually got a lot of flack for my review on my newsletter on Better Offline because people are like, oh yeah, you just went in there wanting to hate it. And it's like, Jesus fucking Christ, what do you want me to do? You want me to just be like, yeah, it's $3,500. People could just crack that out of their wallets. No, something like this, I feel like the press has a duty to kind of crap on it. I don't mean be negative for no reason, but just you have to rip it open. If you put something that costs more than many people's mortgages or monthly rent, and it doesn't work, and it doesn't have half of these things, and it randomly, multiple times I've taken it off and put it on again, and I've had to reset it, just broken all the way down. And there's not been any software updates I see other than the first day.
There's a couple of things. One is that you have more experience with the equipment than I have. I only had 30 minutes, so I didn't have, you know, I didn't get to live with it, right? And go through the consequences of living with it. However, I know you said it was sort of broken and they just pushed it out, but the amount of work that goes into what does work on it, I didn't feel it. I knew it. It was unprecedented, right? Like in terms of how it, how it senses your hands, you know, even if they're out of light, how you're able to, you know, place windows in one room and then walk into another room and then come back and the window the browser window you put is still there. Like there's a lot of thought and a lot of innovation in there and a lot of care. And I don't know that it was ill intentions that had them put it out so much as, look, we have the base product and we know that we're going to make it better the same way we made iPods better, the same way we made iPhones better, the same way we made Apple Watches better. And the applications of it in terms of flight simulation, in terms of, you know, frankly, bereavement, you know, if you lose somebody and you can take a home video that's three-dimensional, that's like reliving that scene of your life with that person, all of that struck me as remarkably valuable and almost worth the initial bugginess, because I think Apple has a track record of improving their products based upon how they work or don't work with people. But you wrote in one of your posts about Vision Pro, Ed, you wrote, I fundamentally believe that Apple, like many tech companies, has become disconnected from the average person. Can you explain that?
Well, I think the place to start is when you say Apple improves their products, what you're saying is Apple improves future generations of their products.
Correct.
And I agree with you that all of this stuff is innovative and it's really cool. At the same time, $3,500 is more than a MacBook Air and a brand new top-of-the-line iPhone. I'm pretty sure you could get a top-of-the-line MacBook Air for that. And then you'd have enough money to hit up Peter Luger. And I think when you think about it without the cost associated, which I get why you would do in the case of doing a demo, yeah, right. Sure. But when you look at the raw price, it is completely disgraceful for a company of this size to try and sell this thing in the state it's in. And I think that at that cost, it is disgraceful. I think it's only something they did to try and get this out into the market, to get developer attention, to get investors to think that Apple's still got their fastball. And the reality is, if they wanted to do that, they should have released this as a developer kit. Had they said the Vision Pro is a developer kit, had they said we will be doing a limited rollout for a year or two, whatever, something responsible, perhaps. Had they launched it with more apps, had they launched it without these glaring obvious bugs that they're yet to fix, I'd agree with you. I just think that when you are asking people to spend probably $4,000 with accessories.
Yeah,
and such.
It's over four
so
grand.
Much. So much. And Apple isn't going to improve the current Vision Pro enough to fix. Like maybe they can fix these bugs, but they certainly haven't talked about them. They haven't really communicated this. They'll fix Future Vision Pros, but they're not going to do any meaningful trade-in program. You'll get, what, like a third of the price if you're lucky? Right. And so that is my core problem. This is a problem I've had going back to when I used to review video games. As a reviewer, sometimes you look at things and say, wow, this is really good, and you kind of view it in the bubble of my experience. But you need to think, in the case of video games, for example, people buy one game a year, maybe two. People buying this Vision Pro will likely have saved up for it, have put real money into it, and now they get this thing that's kind of broken and doesn't do anything better than anything else other than the entertainment stuff. It's just very frustrating. And to kind of finish off what I'm saying, the other frustration I have is the product is getting there. Had they let this thing bake a little more and really paid attention to the app ecosystem and tried it in more than one scenario, this could have been really cool. Also, it should be like $1,000 cheaper at least, maybe even $2,000. They should have waited. They should have waited. It's yet more proof that innovation is reserved for the wealthy and the affluent.
Yeah. This is actually, and we're coming up on the break, so I don't want to like, I'll tease this. You don't have to answer it right now, but this is interesting to me because like it fits into one of the sort of Ed Zitron's signature critiques, which is something that coincidentally or not, Drew and I have been talking about a lot the last few weeks on the podcast, which is the idea of doing, like the idea of this being done to appease Wall Street investors, as which we talk about as this sort of like faceless class of highly distractible, highly demanding rich people, which I guess they are, more or less.
Yeah.
This is an incredibly profitable, incredibly successful company, like probably, you know, in its way as successful as any company could be. And they still needed to get out there and do this stupid little dance with their weird broken luxury product in order to make the number go up for these guys. Even though it is like, I think not to overstate it, but as Ed was saying, like actively hostile in a lot of ways to a lot of the people that will pay the money for this sort of thing. They're going to get ripped off. It's not purely that they're buying it for tech. They're buying it because they want to be first and they want to mess around with it. And that's reasonable.
Yeah, status.
But they're selling a semi-broken product at a luxury price.
And to they made $700 million off of it.
Right. To their most loyal customers. So this is, if you're running a normal business, like if you run a hot dog stand and you get a hot dog that has a USB port in it, but also when you eat it, makes you get, I guess we'll say turbo diarrhea, just for the purposes of argumentation here. If you sold somebody that goes to your hot dog stand all the time, that hot dog, and they got turbo diarrhea, they would be mad at you.
Yeah.
And they would be right to be mad at you. And the fact that it has a USB-C port doesn't necessarily make the hot dog better.
But if the second generation hot dog was delicious.
Exactly that. So this is the thing that I think that Ed has made as a point that has really been instructive to me is the decoupling of the demands of Wall Street and the demands of the consumer, that basically pleasing both of those at the same time right now is somehow out of fashion. And that to please Wall Street, you increasingly have to not just like not serve the customer properly, but antagonize them.
Or make things that are symbolically valuable that may help the customer, but for the most part, just abuse them.
Right. Which is, I don't like that personally.
Me neither.
Before I get to the fake ad, I do want to clarify that, you know, we talk about Wall Street. When we talk about Wall Street, we usually talk about it in terms of, you know, it's a stand-in for extremely rich investors, right? Hedge fund managers, hedge fund clients, you know, people who have a significant amount of money tied up in that market. However, it's my belief that everyone has skin in that game. A lot of people asking, like entire pension funds are in the market.
Sure.
401ks, index markets. Like, you know, most people don't get pensions anymore. They have a 401k and that almost always gets diverted into the stock markets. When you talk about the demands of Wall Street, you're not just talking about the demands of billionaires and multimillionaires. You are talking about people who have their life savings in the market. It's not a substantial amount, but they need it to go up. And when it doesn't go up, they're, you know, they're as unhappy, if not unhappier than Robert Kraft or, you know, anybody like that, you know? So I think that it is a problem that goes beyond, I think it's more widespread than just 1% of people fucking the rest of us over. I think it's that we've all sort of bought in. I don't like using the world we there, because I know that the number of people who have stock is not.
I disagree. It's not 80% fundamentally, because the markets right now are engineered to grow at all costs. They're engineered to companies don't make things abusive and bad because they want to hurt people. They do it because they need to show the markets that they're growing by double-digit percentages every month. The markets do not have to function like this. The markets do not have to function in this idiotic way. And the reason they do is because they're allowed to. That companies are rewarded for burning and churning, for laying off tens of thousands of people like Google does, or giving Sundar Pichai $280 million. They're rewarded for this. I do not think that the retail investors outnumber the amount of people screwed by the fact that major media outlets are being destroyed, yeah, or that Google isn't showing good results, or that Facebook isn't showing you pictures or information from your family. I don't think that balance is there. And I don't think there's any way to square that circle. I just don't think that enough people are benefiting at all. But also, I'm not sure I want to live in a world where things have to be worse so that people that have the opportunity to buy stock can be happier.
Right. That's the bit that I would want to underline as like the bridge between, because I think there's points of correctness in both of what you're saying. It's just that,
yeah,
it's the we live in a society aspect, you know, that there's like investors and consumers are the same people.
But I understand, Drew, that your point is that people have money and pensions.
I want to keep talking about this, but we have to take a break. Before we catch the break, this week's episode is brought to you by England, the country. England, it's jolly good. Okay, we'll be right back with Ed Citron.
Great.
Hey, it's Drew, and this episode of The Distraction is brought to you by Wild Grain. Wild Grain is the first ever bake-from-frozen subscription box for sourdough breads, fresh pastas, and artisanal pastries. Every item bakes from frozen in 25 minutes or less. No thawing required. And now you can fully customize your Wild Grain box, so you can choose any combination of breads, pastas, and pastries. You can even build a box of only breads, only pastas, or only pastries if you'd like. And that's good for me, because I got their cookies baked from frozen, and that was a good cookie. I was very, very impressed with the Wild Grain cookie. And for a limited time, you can get $30 off the first box, plus free croissants in every box, when you go to wildgrain.com/distraction to start your subscription. You heard me. Free croissants in every box, and $30 off your first box when you go to wildgrain.com/distraction. That's wildgrain.com/distraction. Or you can use the promo code distraction at checkout.
The Distraction is sponsored by Factor. Factor's delicious, ready-to-eat meals make eating better every day easy. Wherever tomorrow takes you, be ready with pre-prepared, chef-crafted, and dietitian-approved meals delivered right to your door. You'll have over 35 different options a week to choose from, including keto, calorie smart, vegan and veggie, and more. And there's even more to enjoy with over 55 nutrition-packed add-ons that help make your weekly meal planning even more delicious. There's two-minute meals. Fuel up fast with Factor's restaurant-quality meals that are ready to heat and eat whenever you are. Sign up and save. We've done the math. Factor is less expensive than takeout, and every meal is dietitian-approved to be nutritious and delicious. There's snacks, smoothies, and more. Discover a wide variety of easy options for the entire day, like breakfast, midday bites, and more. Factor is the perfect solution if you're looking for fast, upscale options done easily. It's flexible to fit your schedule as well. You can get as much or as little as you need by choosing 6 to 18 meals per week. Plus, you can pause or reschedule your deliveries anytime. So head to factormeals.com/distraction50 and use code distraction50 to get 50% off. That's code distraction50 at factormeals.com/distraction50 to get 50% off.
Canva presents unexplained appearances. It was an ordinary workday until
that presentation appeared out of thin air.
Also, it's eerily on brand.
Wait, did that agenda just write itself?
Words appear, making this unexplainable case
unexplainable? It's Canva's AI tools.
I can generate slides and words in seconds.
Really? The real mystery is why I'm only learning this now.
Canva.com, designed for work.
Feel like you got enough to do already? I do. That's why I use Shipt same-day delivery to keep up with my busy life. They know the snacks I like down to the extra creamy in my peanut butter. I can get deliveries at home, on set, or even when I'm away on vacay. And my personal shopper, Amber, she's got my back. As in, she asks them to check the back if it's not on the shelf. Shipt, delight in every delivery. Learn more at shipt.com/hi.
And we're back with Ed Zitron, who's talking to us about tech. And I wanted to go on from what we talked about in the last segment to talk about, I think you and me and Roth were aligned in believing that the tech world has essentially forsaken true innovation in favor of basic profit growth. Now, I think we know how it came to that because everybody wants to make money. But more important, I want to ask you, do you see exceptions to this or do you see solutions to this? Outside of like, you know, burn it all down and revolution.
Guillotines. Blah, blah, blah. Everybody understands that guillotines would work.
Yeah, I mean, we're not going to be able to execute Elon Musk. And that's unfortunate.
I disagree. Someone would fill the hole until we fix the problem.
Yep. So, I could easily execute Elon Musk.
So the thing is, you say profit. And I say, not always. OpenAI burns money. They make like over $1 billion. They are not profitable. Anthropic AI, same deal. These companies are not always profitable. Like Google, Facebook, all them, they're profitable. But the only way to reverse this trend is for the markets to turn against them, which I'm afraid is only going to happen if the party stops. If something happens like Facebook's business model collapses, Meta, most of that, like over 90% of their revenue comes from online ads, from selling ads on Facebook and Instagram. And the only way to keep growing that is to make those platforms worse to use. At some point, because of ad tracking ending on iOS, where you have to opt in now, the EU opting out, you have to force, people have to have the option to opt out. It needs to be big and obvious. This party is going to end, and what's going to have to happen is one of these companies is going to have to die. One of these companies is going to have to really shit the bed, or multiple companies are, when the party kind of stops on the growth at all cost economy. Because right now, the markets are rewarding them. And you're seeing kind of a change in startups. Doing my day job running a PR firm. And you can really see that there are a lot of startups having this crazy idea that I've had many times over, where it's, what if you made more money than you spent? And
that doesn't sound
this innovative idea is big. I know. I think they're crazy. But it's, I even saw it when I was growing my firm. People are like, when are you going to scale? When are you going to have 20 people? I'm like, why would I have 20 people? Why would I do that? Is the work going to be better? And they're like, oh, well, you need to be bigger. And I think that this is actually a societal problem. I think we, as a society, we've lionized big business as good business. That a small business is incapable of doing the things of a big business. And perhaps that's true. Perhaps it is. But also, big businesses can be sustainable too. Costco. Costco's are fairly profitable. They treat their people well. They've kept the hot dog price low, which is a classic move on their,
so important.
Their part. But there are so many obvious examples of where this is making things worse that I'm hoping that eventually it just changes because the world turns against it. Look at baseball. It's completely insane that you can run a sports team poorly, getting crap players and playing poorly, and you can still make an insane amount of money. That feels bad. That does not feel like a good way to run something. And my personal thing is, in my small way, and it is very small, advocating for this kind of society is something I think will change things. I think as people become more aware of these massive layoffs and these big executives destroying things like Vice and the way in which they destroy them, I think you are going to see people being more aware of this and creating more things like Defector, like Aftermath, in the case of the media. It's just frustrating because the big tech companies are just getting so rich off of this. And right now they're profitable, but things will eventually change. You'll notice about a year ago, beginning of 2023, Mark Zuckerberg said that was the year of efficiency. To be clear, Facebook is not a particularly efficient business. They still have insane amounts of people. They still treat their customers terribly because they conflate efficiency with sustainability. In its current form, Facebook will die. People need to realize that. They will run out of people in the world to join the platform. Their advertising will become less effective because they can't use cookies to track people anymore. There is a way this all ends, and it's very bad, and it can be stopped by these companies changing their ways. They won't, though. But then the new generation might.
It does feel... I think that that's something that I've felt... You know, you mentioned a little bit about media, and I obviously that's a thing that, Drew and I think and talk about.
Well, yeah, because this is actually all... Because as in PR, this was all actually surreptitiously an ad for Defector. So thank you, Ed, for... Being complicit.
It's everywhere you want to be.
Yeah, go, yeah, anyway, but, go ahead, Roth.
But what I mean by that is that like there's this sense that because of how much money is still kind of like dead stupid money is like sitting around in institutions like that. That like Vice, you know, has completed nearly this entire cycle of, you know, what it is to like grow and then shrink. But what's left, they fired all the people that make this stuff. And what's left is a friend who used to work there joked when, you know, they were at the end, he was like, they're going to fire everybody. It's just going to be 20 executives doing TikToks. Like that's what Vice is going to turn into. And I think it's like, it is the executives that are the last ones there. They have a lot invested in and they get paid more than anybody else. It doesn't necessarily matter because they're dealing with their own cohort and speaking their own sort of language within that group. It doesn't really matter if they do a good job anymore one way or the other. There's a lot of questions about what a good job even is. And so the idea of one of those people waking up one morning and being like, I think we should try to run this as a sustainable, profitable business, a modestly profitable thing that could go on indefinitely.
You're fired.
Making good work. They just, but they won't fucking do that. Like they will go to zero instead of doing that. Well, and that is a really hard thing to sort of, if you're not just if you're running a business like Defector, but if you're like a fucking normal person that does your own books in your own life. The idea of being like, no, I'm going to like default on all of my credit cards. I'm going to max them out, default, change my identity. Like,
and it'll be fine.
Yes. Like that is not the way.
But this is why people are so fucking depressed. Because you're right. If you ran your life like Corey Hike, who's the chief operating officer of Vice, and I'm naming her because she's a fucking scumbag and I don't give a rat fuck. She ran Mike.com into the ground. She did an op-ed on Vox.com about how the future of journalism is video and then ran Mike into the ground, losing, what, over 100 people their job. With Vice, Vice took on tons of debt. Vice choked out the actual journalism. They took on this insane thing where they guaranteed dividends to investors. And on top of that, they deprioritize journalism, the thing that gives Vice its value.
The
it's
product.
The same thing that happened with Sports Illustrated.
The item for sale.
But the thing is, people are getting depressed about the world because of this effect, because of the growth at all costs economy. Because they look at their own lives, like you said, and they say, I can't run my life like this. I can't go bigger and bigger and bigger. I can't do that. That doesn't work. Why are there different rules for people than there are corporations? And no one has a cogent answer because there isn't one other than there is a, it's not a coterie of people. There's millions of just insanely wealthy people who are able to dick around and destroy things in the process. The actual thing that will change this will be the new entities that step in to replace it. I don't think anyone should be scared of everything ending, but I think that there is going to be, and we're in a period of upheaval. It's just disgraceful that these people are getting rich while they do it. They should be run out of town with pitchforks. And I don't mean Pitchfork Media, which was also shut down.
Folks.
It's a fucking joke. I found that one on the way to it.
I give the shuddering of Pitchfork 0.2.
And it's just, none of these things actually need to happen. In both Vice and Pitchfork's, and even Sports Illustrated's case, they could have just given it or run it sustainably and made a modest profit, probably not even that modest, by giving it to the very smart people that wrote there. They could have just handed it off, but the Maven turned Sports Illustrated into the shittiest version of SB Nation since SB Nation. And it was incredible. Everything that happened with Sports Illustrated was based on the idea that they could monetize the brand. Did they think about it for a second? Huh, why is Sports Illustrated a good brand?
Right.
Well,
why
because
is
we
this
bought
brand
it for $100 million. Ugh. Very angry about this stuff.
You know, when I first brought it up with you when we came in from the break, you know, I said profit growth, and you said you're wrong. A lot of these places aren't aren't profitable. And, you know, I should have been clearer because I think it's not at some point, and I think this is an evolution. It went from not corporate profit growth that was the priority, but individual profit growth within the corporation, right? So if I'm Jamie Salter and I own Sports Illustrated, well, I don't really give a fuck if the company profits. I only give a fuck if I get my $50 million bonus at the end of the year for fucking over the company. And the solution in my mind is not necessarily, I mean, I don't think it's a sort of, you know, the masses rising up in some sort of consumer revolution or something like that. But I think it's law, right? It's, we need to have better regulations in place that I think, you know, Elizabeth Warren has been stumping for the entirety of her career, that, you know, essentially make it illegal to run a business this way. Because if it's never illegal, it'll just keep happening.
It's another issue with the money, though, that, like, it's so cheap to keep things from happening at a national level politically. When you consider how much money these people can waste on a Super Bowl party, that's enough money in campaign donations to make sure that what you said never happens. I agree that legislation is the only way. That so much of what you look at this stuff happening, the first question that springs to my mind always, and I'm not new to any of this, is how the fuck could this possibly be legal?
Right.
And the answer is just, you know, we know the answer to that.
I don't think it always was legal.
Yeah. I think it wasn't. I think you're right. But
I think it was legal, but I'm sure that there was a point when all of this changed. But the real thing we need here is strong labor laws, because one of the important parts of destroying companies like this is being able to fire everyone instantly, or large chunks of them instantly. If we had European-style laws where it was just a complete nightmare to fire them, it would stop things like Vice happening, perhaps. Google, they spent $1 billion on firing people last year.
I couldn't believe that shit, dude. I read that in your newsletter. Billions of dollars in severance.
And it's just, yeah, they can do that. And you know what? It's good that they were made to pay, but at the same time, I don't know, make it a percentage. If you have to, as a corporation over a certain size, lay off more than 50% of your staff, I don't know. If you have to do that, you have to incur an actual percentage-based penalty. It should not be something like that. But also, there should be penalties for running a business of a certain scale badly. But because we've got so many, no big government people, right. It's like, we need to have the right to fuck people over every time. None of these people, Corey Ike's going to be fine. I mean, she ran Mike into the ground. She is the poster child for Pivot to Video and the damage that did, that destroyed chunks of the New York media scene. And Mike at one point was amazing. The reason I'm so annoyed about this is the second major outlet where I've seen good journalism buzzsawed by people who don't know how to run a business. They made like $1 billion in revenue or something insane like that. At no point up to $1 billion did they think, maybe we could, I don't know, what if we made more money than we spent? And they're like, no, we must scale. We must scale. And the comment you made about executives doing TikTok, that's what's going to happen, but it's not going to be the executives. Don't worry. They will not be doing any of the actual work. I don't know. In my kind of insane society, I would want it so that if you run an outlet like that, you have to write. You have to have a certain amount of, there has to be something that gives you the fundament to run something like this. One of the reasons I like Defector is you all actually write. You actually create things. You understand the editorial process. So many of these executives, and this is the bigger labor problem, so many executives don't do anything. There's like, I've written about this on Business Insider a few times. It's, they can't describe what they do on a daily basis. They're like, 25% of it is meetings and 55% is strategy. 20%, that's tactics.
Same. Honestly, that's a perfect balance in my opinion. But I think you're exactly right that there is this, like, it's that at that level, the way that power sort of expresses itself is effective, like with an A, like it is through affect. It is through a series of gestures that indicate leadership, up to and including laying people off, you know, and writing these letters about we need to put ourselves in a position to succeed due to economic headwinds, blah. I mean, it's like procedural text generated, stuff. Like it doesn't necessarily have any substance to it. But that's the part that I have the hardest And you've, so Ed has written for me at different platforms, including when I was at Vice, but at Deadspin as well. Not about tech, but about his travels among the very, very rich people at NFL games and other sporting events. And I want you to talk about that in a moment, but there's one bit about these people that I hope you could explain to me, either as somebody that writes about it or as somebody who has shuffled through a shrimp buffet with them at Levi's Stadium in Santa Clara. I think that there is an element of... not even personal animus, because I don't think that Corey Hike really thinks very much about the people that worked for her advice, like the journalists. Like, they don't necessarily register. They're NPCs.
You can't, because then you wouldn't be able to do what you did to them.
Exactly. You wouldn't be able to get out of fucking bed in the morning because right. of how guilty you would feel.
I actually think that that's a good thing. They should have to take a phone call with 20% of the people they laid off for half an hour each.
Yeah, just listen to them get... like describe their experience. I remember when
it's
we were
like the serial killer at the sentencing has to hear
yeah, witness impact from the statements. Families.
Yeah,
we did that when we were organizing advice. So that was part of the. I mean, it wasn't like a tactic in negotiation, but we organized that newsroom when I was working there with Writers Guild of America. And part of what we had to do was when there was always like one exec and somebody that was running it was usually some sort of like type A person that had been brought in from outside the organization to act as a sort of a shit shield between the CEOs and the founders and the workers. And we just talked about what our actual lives were like given the demands of the work and how much we were getting paid. And there's people that were like, I get paid $40,000 a week. Like, I have to work 60 hours a week. They're calling me in on Sundays to like fucking hold a light at a photo shoot. That's not my job. I don't get paid extra. They wouldn't let me eat off the catering table, blah, blah, blah. And you could see that this was like the first time that any of these executives had ever not just encountered the idea of how uncomfortable the people that were working for them were, but encountered the idea of people working for them as people who like also had to eat lunch and like use the bathroom. I think that there's the abstraction of these rich people. This is me winding up towards the actual question. Is there any way to sort of penetrate that? Because you can see at this point, if you're spending $1 billion on severance, or if you're doing, I always come back to Boeing, with all the work that they did just because they didn't want to make shit in union factories, they made their product worse and it's less efficient. Is there any way to communicate that it does not have to be bad business to run a decently humane workplace? Or is there so much invested politically, culturally, whatever in this class that they will never get that idea through their heads?
I realize saying blogging is advocacy is not really accurate or good. I do think that as people, regular people, are more aware of this, and as these big stupid things keep happening, the business press and major papers will begin to move against them. You saw it kind of with the work from home fight, where they were like incredulously telling you, yeah, you need to come into the office for no reason, but now
you're actually happier when you do this. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. It's better for you. I know this because I'm never in the office, but I think what a lot of these people saw is they've lost millions of dollars on real estate and people still aren't coming in. Mm-hmm. So I think you might actually see a shift. It's going to take a while against these types of businesses. As just consumer sentiment turns against it, I don't think it will affect everything, but when we have our next financial crash, I don't know when the hell that's coming. I think we might be in a boom town for a bit, and then the shit will really hit the fan when this rot economy kind of falls apart.
Yeah, but the boom. Yeah, baby.
Oh, but yeah, the boom. Yeah. But the boom that never fucking seems rocks. To make it to normal people. Just like Bitcoin heads and retail investors. And even then, you ever notice that it's not regular people that are like making a ton of money off of this? It's always, anyway, I think that as consumer awareness grows with this and as the business press sours on this kind of growth at all cost model, I think we will see a change. Sadly, what I think is going to cause this is the AI companies collapsing. OpenAI is a ticking time bomb. They do not make money. The server costs cost too much and everyone's putting AI in everything.
Yeah, they have not come up with a product that has a practical application that people want to use.
If I go to ChatGPT, will it talk dirty to me, though?
Maybe. I don't know. I don't have any real reason to use it. It's just kind of like, here we go. Here's the thing.
But I also think that, Drew, which is weird, because I think that that's like one of the applications. The same thing with like the Vision Pro, where it's like, just enable pornography on there, and then you're making money.
Oh, yeah, like, yeah. It all comes back to porn. There's zero doubt about it.
But the thing is, this whole problem deeply bothers me, as you know, because I write thousands of words at it for no reason. And it frustrates me, but I have hope, because people are, the response I get from what I'm saying is, everyone kind of feels this way. This is a growing sentiment. This will change. As we watch the world's most quirked up white boys lose billions of dollars, referring, of course, to Sam Altman, Elon Musk, and Mark Zuckerberg.
They're extremely
Elon Musk
up.
Actually, I think, is going to help this more than anything, because Tesla will fall. Elon will fall. He's also, from what the Wall Street Journal says, abusing his body with drugs. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying what the journalist said. Please don't sue.
You can say that here.
But nevertheless, I think people are seeing how much of a fool Elon Musk is, and that helps as well. And they're seeing these companies lay off people, and consumers are so aware of how this is happening. And I think that when the next crash happens, the result will be we'll lose one of the big tech companies, and we will see a rebirth of better companies. If we don't, we're just going to have a repeated cycle of boom and bust until consumers just fucking rise up. People are getting blackpilled off of this entire thing. People are aware. Young people are depressed and lost. They have no idea where to turn, because big assholes get away with murder, literally and figuratively, Boeing versus otherwise, and nothing happens to them. They're able to run their lives unsustainably, as the government and some journalists and executives say, well, you just need to work harder. That's how you make more money. It's becoming obvious that working hard is not what got them there. And I think the only other choice is people are going to get radicalized. People are going to get deeply dark over this. If you want to know what the actual result of this is, that's one of them.
Can I really believe that, Ed, when I see Bob Marley One Love make a significant profit at the box office?
Actually, you know the one that really got me?
People like dog shit.
No, the documentary about the guy who invented Flaming Hot Cheetos.
Yeah, that's just not real.
It's just a complete lie. It's just a complete fucking lie.
Yeah.
They didn't pull it. They just ran it. It's on Hulu today. Just, they're laughing at us. That's what people feel like. They are laughing at us.
I love the idea of Elon as that every time he just blows a huge rail of some powder, we don't know what it is, and I'm not speculating.
Cocaine.
And
then you're talking about cocaine.
Cocaine could be cocaine.
Cocaine gets laced Twitter, with Adderall.
Gets on Twitter and ats the president of IBM with a message that's basically, how do you open PDF? Like, when every time that happens, the idea that he's somehow striking a blow against his own class is an idea that I find very appealing.
And
I
just to be
believe,
clear, he texted Satya Nadella because something didn't work with Outlook. He couldn't set up a Windows PC without
his
giving,
gaming PC.
It's so fucking funny. Like,
man. I mean, I do hope he dies, but he rocks. He's a very, he's a very funny character to have in the culture.
We should open the fun bag, but we do have to talk about sports for a second. And I just wanted to say, Ed, that Peter King retired on Monday. I wanted to ask you, Ed, what's your favorite Peter King memory?
I don't know who that is, so...
Perfect. You know what? That's a perfect answer. I think that's great. Time to open up the fun bag. These are real questions from Defector readers and Distraction listeners. We only have time for one, Ed. This is from Todd. Todd writes in, my wife confessed that she never puts soap in and around her toes or under her feet. She assumes the soap running down does the trick. She's also worried that the soap will make her feet slippery and that she'll fall in the shower. So I'm curious, what's your perspective? Is my wife more efficient with her shower time, or are her feet just gross? Now, Roth and I have had this discussion with Tyler Tynes about legs, about washing your legs in the shower, but what about the feet, particularly the bottoms of your feet?
Yes, what about the feeties, Ed? What about the feeties?
Well, we love our feet, don't we, folks?
We do love them. They're beautiful.
But just to be clear, if her logic is that the soap would make her feet slippery, what does she think the water's doing? There's water. Your feet are not just perfectly flat seals against, it's not like you suction cup on. I think that perhaps you don't have to do it every time, but you should probably do it like a couple times a week just to make sure, especially on particularly sweaty days. Like, I would wash those bad boys much like our Lord and Savior Jeebus Christ did. really fucked that one up.
It's time for me to vehemently disagree with you, because while water can make things slick, a shower, particularly if it has the industrial grade sand strips, you know, as you would get in a hotel, the surface of the shower is no slip, even if you are wet. It's designed to be that way. However, I have tried washing the bottom of my feet on a few occasions with soap, and it has indeed cost me traction and made me very, very afraid that I would slip and bump my head. And so I do not wash the bottoms of my feet every day because I don't want to have another accident. And that, my friend, is a fact. It's a fact. I don't want you to deny it.
I'm gonna come to your house with soap on your feet.
I'm gonna fucking wash your feet, big boy.
I bet you're gonna love that. Whoa, that's kind of hot. I need OpenAI to give me the full.
So Drew's official position now is: will wash the bottom of his feet. Does not bother to wash his legs.
No, I do wash my legs now.
Okay, good. All right,
I wash my legs. I realized I told
Tyler. Were
you
like shamed into it by that podcast?
No, it was that I did it without realizing that I did it. Does that make sense? Like, it was just sort of automatic. I was like, oh, I actually am washing my feet, or I am washing my legs. The feet, though, like, I have to have, like, stepped in manure or, you know, blood, as I did last week.
In the shower?
No. Before getting in the goddamn shower. I didn't kill someone in the shower. You don't do that. You kill them out in the open.
Yeah, gosh.
You know, Elon Musk, I'm not killing him in my shower. I'm killing him in my front yard. You know, it's easier.
I would love Elon to answer this question. Just be like, well, actually, the wokes are the reason that you would be washing your feet. And he's just trying to hide the fact that he has a little man wash him. It's like, yeah. I mean, I wash normally. And yeah, you know how people shower. And I want a journalist actually to ask Elon Musk how he showers, because just the idea that he showers himself is just very strange to me. He definitely
has a
little man.
It's a Harkonnen scenario. It is 100% a Harkonnen scenario. So he's lowered into and then levitates out of a vat.
Ooh,
like Skarsgård.
I like that. I like that visual. That's good. Oh, Ed, you are a fabulous guest, and we're going to have you on again to get all super angry about tech. But Ed, plug your shit.
So very easy, yeah? You just go to betteroffline.com and you can find the newsletter and the podcast. And yeah, you can find me on Twitter at @EdZitron, Blue Sky, Zitron.bsky.social.
We also, congratulations to Roth and I for not doing phony British accents to a British person.
Oh, caught, right?
Well, I did. I did say, are you having a laugh, mate? That's my fault.
That sounds more Jamaican than British. I'm sorry.
I know. Look, I'm bad at it, Ed.
Oh, okay. I want to commend Ed for breaking into a pretty credible Great Plains yokel accent for like 5 seconds in the middle of the podcast. I thought that was pretty cool.
Work is at the heart of what we do here at the Distraction Podcast.
Broadcaster, okay?
Eric Silver is our producer. Brandon Grugel is our editor. Our theme song is by Kirk Hamilton. Ads and production services are by Multitude. Subscribe to Vector.com right now. Vector, hit that subscribe button, y'all. You also... You can also email us iatdistraction@defector.com or even call us at 909-726-3720 and leave a message. It's 909-Panera-0. Wow, I made it through that whole thing.
Calling it the best accent work of all time.
That was yeehaw. A horrific accent. This is why American actors don't do accents. All right, Ed, you were great. Please come on again sometime.
Thanks, Ed.
Anytime. Thank you.